The following is a paid program.
The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Welcome in to our Friday edition of the Leach Report. Cats heading down to Gainesville tomorrow. We'll talk about that on the show today, as well as just college basketball in general. Mike DeCourcy will be by for his regular Friday appearance on the show. Mark Wise, who is a radio analyst for the Gators Network, along with an analyst on ESPN. He actually worked the Houston and Temple game last night. And Shannon Spake will join us. We haven't talked to Shannon in forever. Covered the Cats for many years with ESPN, and now she works for Fox. Doesn't do a lot of college basketball anymore, but she does a lot of NFL. So we'll get a few Super Bowl thoughts from Shannon. That's our lineup today, always presented by Sleep Outfitters here on the Leach Report. We are served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. And we'll get to the Wildcat News of the Day, which is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Cats at the Gators tomorrow. Kentucky has only 4 wins since I think 2004 down at the O-Dome, or now the Exact Tech Arena. And that's because Florida's been really good during that stretch. That's usually how that works. But I think Florida's a little sneaky, playing a little sneaky good at the moment. They started off conference play at 1-3, but they won 4 of their last 5. The only one they lost was at TCU last Saturday in a game where they just shot it miserably. I think the atmosphere will be closer to what Kentucky saw at Auburn than in Vanderbilt on Tuesday. Commodores are struggling, and there were probably about as many Kentucky fans as Vandy fans there, and there weren't a lot of students. But the Gators will have the rowdy reptiles there, and I think it'll be a crazy atmosphere for the Wildcats to go into. Florida, when they do shoot it well, makes a lot of threes. They get 40% of their points via the three-point line. Not a great offensive rebounding team. I think they're 9th in the league. Kentucky's really rebounding well. They lead the league in defensive rebounds. They've rebounded it really well in the defensive glass and the offensive glass for most of the year. So I think Kentucky needs to maximize an advantage in rebounding in this game. They also got to be careful with the basketball. Florida's number one in forcing turnovers. And P.J. Washington running a streak of 3 consecutive 20-point games. Last time player got 4 was Malik Monk in early part of the 16-17 season. Jamal Murray had a run of 12 consecutive SEC games with 20 or more back in 2016 when he got it rolling. The UK women, another tough beat on the road. They lost a close one at South Carolina, 74-70, despite 21 from Macy Morris. Kind of a similar script to the A&M game last Sunday. They played well but came up just short. Macy had a big game. I saw a story from Ben Roberts of the Herald Leader where he caught up with Dante Allen and Dante's dad. Dante had surgery on the knee that he injured playing for Pendleton County, so the season is done. But according to the story from Ben and the Herald Leader, Dante's dad says that the surgery has gone very well, and if the rehab continues to go as well as it has been, that Dante could be ready to go by the official start of practice in October. So redshirting, which has been something that has been thrown around a lot, Dante's dad says they've not even talked about redshirting yet with the Kentucky coaches, and that's not something they're looking at. My guess would be if this all plays out like they suspect, he's obviously going to be behind if he didn't get to start till October. But there wouldn't necessarily be a reason where you'd have to redshirt him, because to stay in time, if the guy's as good as you think he's going to be, you're not going to get the fifth year that you'd get from redshirting him as a freshman. So if he could get ready by the middle part, second half of the season, it'd be like a transfer coming in at mid-year. So We'll see how that plays out, but may not necessarily be a lost first season for Dante Allen. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Heading to a break. We'll catch up to Mark Wise when we come right back. It is the Leach Report Radio Network, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at TomLeachKY.
Mark Wise joins us on the Kentucky Branded Hotline, longtime radio analyst on the Florida Gator Network, and you see him now on ESPN frequently this time of year, such as last night from Houston, where he was working the Cougars' win over Temple, 73-66. And Mark, I was watching the Open, and you guys were talking about bubbles and the bracket watch and Temple being a bubble team. And I was saying earlier that that's a little bit of what a Kentucky will encounter tomorrow, in that this would be, Gators have been playing a little better, and beating Kentucky would be a huge step to making their case to get in the tournament.
Tom, I said this last night on the air, coaches will never admit this, but they all look at it. They all look at bracketology. We all do. We want to know who's the last four in, who's the first four out. So I think Florida is going to live there most of the year as we head to February now and the rest of this regular season. So any kind of win over a quadrant one opponent, because that's the only thing lacking in Florida's resume. And they're going to get plenty of opportunities, because I think of their remaining 11 games, I think seven of them are quadrant one opportunities, including the next three in a row, because they have Kentucky tomorrow, and then next week they're on the road at Auburn in Tennessee.
They got out to a 1-3 start in the league. They lost at home to South Carolina on a really tough beat, lost at home to the Vols. And I think people, I was saying earlier, they're kind of playing sneaky good right now, because they won four out of five, and the only loss is a game they didn't shoot it very well down at TCU.
Yeah, there's no secret here. It's a team that struggles to score at times. They're built to score at the arc only. They really play a lot of the game four against five, and that's not to belittle Kavarius Hayes, because what he gives them in terms of motor and leadership and defensive presence and a rim protector is outstanding. He just can't score. And so anytime you play four against five, I think it's a challenge. And it'll be a big-time challenge when you talk about going against the length of Kentucky. And they seem to be guarding the arc a little better themselves. And if Florida's going to win, like most great upsets, I think the genesis starts at the three-point line, and that's where it will start tomorrow.
Yeah, this is kind of probably the kind of game that Kentucky would see, early first couple of games of an NCAA tournament run, a team that doesn't have a strong inside presence, but that can hurt you at the three-point line. And Kentucky's, the games they've lost, I think they've been outscored an average of 19 a game at the three-point line.
Yeah, and I saw where Kentucky actually won the Battle of the Arc, and I've been saying this for a while. If the offense at the Arc ever catches up to the rest of the game, the rest of the league and the country is in trouble. I had Kentucky earlier in the year, as you remember. I had them against Winthrop. I know they went through a series of teams where they played teams that took a lot of threes. Well, that's when it's going to be a throwback to that. So they're going to have to defend the arc, and at the same point in time, Florida, this is a horrible matchup for Florida in terms of once the ball gets up on the rim. Florida is not a very good rebounding team, again, because they play a lot of four out. They're a small team, and from a matchup standpoint, from a physicality standpoint, this is really a bad matchup for Florida.
Kevon Allen, how's his season going? I know he scored well the last couple of games, but sense is that he's a little bit of an underachiever or a disappointment as far as how it's played out to this point.
Well, he certainly has turned it around in league play. It's been an interesting dichotomy to watch in terms of Florida's two senior scorers, because Allen and Hudson both struggled early in the season. Mike White was disappointed in both in terms of the way they were bringing energy and effort, and that's sad to say, but that Mike White has said that publicly. So from that standpoint, Kayvon Allen has totally turned his game around. Jalen Hudson has been one of the great mysteries in college basketball this year, averaging better than 15 points a game last season. He's been a career 38-39% shooter from the arc, and right now he's just mired in this senior slump that he doesn't seem to be able to get out of, and I think they've tried to push a lot of buttons. And I think, you know, it's interesting because I did the Wednesday night game on TV against Ole Miss for Florida, for the SEC Network, and Kermit Davis kind of echoed what I think every coach in the league is concerned about with Hudson. They all know that a 25-point game is in there. They just don't want it to be against them. So it's kind of interesting to listen to coaches that way.
Yeah, you know it's coming one of these nights, and it'll be something sometimes you can't do anything about, it seems like. Mark, I appreciate the time. I know you're traveling. Travel safe.
All right, thanks, Tom.
That is Mark Wise. I grew up here in central Kentucky, and as I said, longtime analyst with Mick Hubert on the Florida Gator Radio Network. He makes a good point there about Kentucky and the if they consistently would – say, get their average of threes up around 7 or 8 a game. May not need to, but if they did, whoo, they could take them to another level. Getting to a break, Shannon Spake, when we come right back. It's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
23 after the top of the hour, and back to the Kentucky Branded Hotline to bring on a dear friend that we don't get to talk to much anymore because she's not covering the Cats in the SEC. Shannon Spake, now with Fox, where you see her on Race Hub on weeknights and covering a lot of NFL. So we'll get a little Super Bowl take from Shannon. Hello there.
Hi, how's it going?
Doing well. Good to hear from you.
Long time. I know. It's been a while.
Who you got in the Super Bowl?
How's the season going for you guys?
Doing well. I mean, they're playing as well as they've played in a long time. Certainly as well as they played all this season, and probably in the last couple of weeks playing better than they might have at any point last season. You know, you don't beat Vandy in Memorial Gym by 35 too often, so that was a pretty strong statement the other night. You remember?
Right, yeah,
what that's
I did
like.
Watch most of the Kansas game, and you know, I worked one basketball game this year, which is unfortunate because you guys know how much I love basketball. But I was able to work a Seton Hall Villanova game, and of course, Seton Hall goes out and puts up 17 3-pointers and wins by 30 points in the game. So. But it was still hoops, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk a little bit about the Super Bowl because you cover a lot of NFL now for Fox. Who do you got, the Rams or the Patriots?
Well, I think if Todd Gurley is healthy, I think that the Rams have a lot more weapons. And I think you'll hear it from everybody, right? They, on paper, certainly have a lot more weapons and are a lot more talented, I think, than the New England Patriots. But it's one of those things, right? It's just like Jimmy Johnson in racing. It's like, how do you bet against Tom Brady? I don't think that there was one person watching that game when they played Kansas City that did not think, with Tom Brady having the ball in his hands with a minute left or a minute and a half left, that he wasn't going to go down the field and score. He's so clutch. He's been in this situation so many times. It's almost like, you know, when you see sometimes, remember that one year that Kentucky wasn't having a great season, and then all of a sudden when they went to the tournament, they ended up in the championship game, and you went, where did this come from? That's kind of how Tom Brady is, right? He just like puts it in a totally different gear when you get into the playoffs and certainly in the Super Bowl. But with that being said, I think, you know, with Woods, with Todd Gurley, with C.J. Anderson, sort of as where he's kind of come out of nowhere and been able to do what he's done, I think talent-wise, and on the other side of the ball, Aaron Donald and Sue, that Aaron Donald is one of the most impressive players I've ever seen out there on the field. He's amazing. Like, you walk up to him, and he's not this big, huge, domineering person, but he's just this little ball of muscle, and he's so dynamic in what he does out there, and I think he's really going to give. I know that offensive line has been great for Tom, but I think that is going to certainly give him a challenge, Aaron Donald and Sue on that defensive line.
And I've read from people who cover the league regularly that one of the few things that can sometimes bother Brady is that they get a push right up into his face in the middle. That's where I would think Donald and Sue could maybe be a big factor in this game for the Rams.
Yeah, those of us that are on the opposite side of 40 don't like to get hit and put on the ground very much, right? We don't bounce back as quickly as we did when we were in our 20s and 30s. And Tom Brady is certainly north of the 40 mark. And so, yes, he does not like to be touched. He does not like to be put on the floor. He wants to do what he does. But he does get the ball out so fast. And he's seen it all. And his reaction time and his ability to read plays and see the secondary and all of that stuff. He's put in his 10,000 hours as Maxwell Gladwell. I think that's what his name was, would say. Malcolm Gladwell, right?
Yes.
Is that who he was?
The outlier guy. Yes.
Yep. Exactly.
Youth angle for the Rams, young head coach versus a guy like Belichick, young quarterback versus Brady. You've spent time around these guys with the Rams. Is that a concern if you're a Rams fan?
Again, I think the talent is there, but it's even like when we watch a national championship game this year, like Clemson came out, and at the beginning of that game, you kind of thought to yourself, wow, they're making some mistakes. They look a little tight. They look a little nervous. But as the game progressed, all of those nerves went away because these guys will tell you it's all the build up, right? It's all the walking out of the tunnel. Their heartbeats are going real fast. But once this game starts, once they take a couple hits, once they throw a couple passes, once they catch a couple passes, like it comes back to them. They've been doing this since they were, you know, how old, and it's just football. And if those guys remember that in this game, I think that the age thing or the youth thing will dissipate quickly. And you realize, like, Robert Woods is not a rookie. You know, you do have a rookie quarterback, but Robert Woods is not a rookie. Yes, Todd Gurley hasn't been in the league that long, but he does have experience. C.J. Anderson has been on several teams. So they do have a calming force within that group. And McVay, I think he's a genius. I think everyone says that, right? I don't know if you guys saw, I posted a picture of me kind of giving him a fist pump.
Yes, I did see that.
And I jokingly said, like, hey, I'm going to put my name in for the running now in terms of, being a head coach, because it seems like anyone who is associated with McVay in any way now has, you know, credentials to be a coach. But it's the truth. He's created something very special over there, and what he's done, everybody wants to put in a bottle and capture. And I hope it's a very close game. I'd love to see these two go back to back. Just go back and forth. I'd love to see a shootout, which is kind of what we've seen offensively in the NFL this season. And I would love to see this game not go into overtime and for it not to be determined by a coin flip.
Well, it's the Cats and Gators tomorrow. And as I recall, that was a divided house that you live in with Brady and Liam, right?
Yes. Yes, well, because one son liked blue and one son liked green. So Liam would always be for the Gators and Brady would always be for the Kentucky Wildcats.
Good boy.
And actually, it's kind of a divided household now, right? Because going into the Super Bowl, my one son's name is Brady, not after Tom Brady. It's actually a family name, but his name is Brady. So he, of course, is rooting for the Patriots and Tom Brady. And then, of course, my other son on the other side is going to go opposite of his brother and is going to go for the Rams. So we'll have a divided family on Sunday as well.
Well, enjoy the game. And it was good to hear from you. And one of these days we'll be able to cross paths again.
Absolutely. Hello to all of Big Blue Nation out there. I hear from a lot of you guys on Twitter, and I miss you guys a lot. Make sure our show starts next week, Tom. Race Hub. We have a brand new studio this year. It's state of the art. It is the graphics and the things that we're going to bring the fans at home, the race fans.
Got to run, Shannon.
Incredible. Okay, Tom.
Thank you.
You're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and The Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
Second half of our show for this Friday. We're always served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Couple of pieces of business to clean up. First of all, we ran out of time finishing up with Shannon Spake. Her show, Race Hub, returns next week. It's, I think, 6 o'clock Monday through Friday night on Fox Sports 1. And Tommy writes in to tell me, and I knew this, it was just I don't know what I was thinking about. I was talking about Kentucky was on the road at South Carolina. I was following the game last night, listening to Darren for a while. I was also then following on Twitter from all the people reporting for the Coliseum. So anyway, it was at the Coliseum last night where South Carolina beat Kentucky 74-70. They go down to Columbia on the 21st of February. Mike DeCourcy joins us now from SportingNews.com and at TSN Mike on Twitter. And Kentucky is on quite a roll right now, Mike. Certainly not the same team that you and I saw up in Indianapolis on the 6th of November, or even really anywhere in November. This kind of started in early December. What has been the biggest change that you see in Kentucky now?
Well, I think that the biggest change is that guys who, and I think really almost, you know, four-fifths of the lineup had to learn how to play defense. Now, Ashton, a lot of what he does, he was already great at, but he had to learn how to mix what he does wonderfully well with four other players. And the wings obviously had to grow defensively, and that's a big adjustment for a guy coming from high school on in that position especially. Because a wing defender in high school, except for when he's playing in summer ball, when he's playing in high school ball, most of the time, he's rarely facing a player his size. So it changes the dynamic of that. And often, he's just really close to the basket because he's tall and not have to do much more than block a shot here or there. And then Reed Travis, coming from Stanford, had to learn, and still, I think, is still adjusting to the level of defensive responsibility that goes with being required in some ways to win every game. I mean, you're not going to win every one, but every game that Kentucky loses is a blow to their ambition. And at Stanford, it wasn't always, you know, I mean, no one expected them to do a lot. And so I don't think that the level of defensive responsibility was the same. And I think he's had to adjust to the attention to detail that's required to win at the level Kentucky wants to win. And all of that, I think PJ, really just is a question of him mixing and understanding what the other four were, you know, what they were capable of doing initially and then what they could grow into. I mean, he understood what college defense was about at Kentucky's level and actually did some really good things in that regard early on, but he's become even more significant as everyone else has grown into that.
We're at the start of February now, so kind of moving into the stretch run of the regular season. In a month and a half, the SEC tournament will start the postseason phase of this. What does Kentucky need to... at this point, I think you know what you're good at and you know what you need to improve on. So what does Kentucky need to improve on, or sometimes if you can't improve on it, that you have to disguise better?
Well, you know, I mentioned before the idea of Reed continuing to make defensive progress, and I think that's important. I think connected to that is Nick Richards continuing to earn whatever playing time the game makes available and not have it governed by how he's playing, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Like Cal can put him in there and trust him to do what's needed to be done at any moment, and not Cal puts him in, he misses two rebounds that he could have, and then Cal has to get kind of angry and put him down. That would be a huge step for Kentucky, that whenever Nick is called on to help the team, he does everything, all his responsibilities while he's out there. Now, if you look at the last few games, he's done some good things. I mean, he scored 10 at Vandy. He blocked 5 shots at Kentucky, and that was not insignificant. Some of those were against Dedrick Lawson, who's an All-American. And to do that, you're limiting the All-American's influence on the game. That was great. But he's still struggling to rebound at the level that Cal wants and needs him to do. And so there are moments when Cal just says, I needed that ball, and he didn't get it, and there's no reason he didn't get it other than he didn't go for it or he wasn't where he should have been or whatever. And then Cal takes him out. So Nick needs to get to that spot. And it's certainly, you know, sometimes centers, it's a hard position to rebound from, harder than people think. oh, you're 6'11", you should be able to get the ball. Well, sometimes you're not the guy that's in position to get the ball. But, one, I think he's in position to get more balls than he does. And, two, you can still do your part in rebounding if you are technically correct. If you are doing your job in that department by blocking out and causing traffic, it often can lead to your teammate getting the ball. So, and that's all an awareness thing. Okay, I know I'm not going to get there, but if I block out my guy, then he's not going to get there, and then PJ's going to get it or whatever. So he's got to continue to make progress in that regard. And then offensively, I think they just need to continue to understand, and I think Ashton's grown greatly in this. Understand, okay, what is working against this defense? Because we got five guys. Ashton's the one with the ball, but in his mind, there are four other guys out there that can be the guy on that day. And so the first thing they have to establish is, who does the opposition want to take out? And if it's Tyler, then do something else. And if it's Keldon, you know, et cetera, et cetera. If the other team decides with their defensive game plan that they're taking away this person first, then Ashton's job at that point is to figure out how to get it to that person, the next guy in line. And I think that's a huge, huge advantage for Kentucky to be able to have that kind of flexibility. Very few teams in college basketball put five guys on the floor that can go and get you 20 at any point. And that's, you know, so I think they need to continue to work at that. And, you know, you go back, I don't want to say they're going to win two in a row or anything like that, but the team offensively, this reminds me the most of, in function, if not in form, is the Florida teams that went back-to-back in 06 and 07. Mm. They didn't have a specific guy that they wanted to ride. They had five guys that could get 20, and they were going to take whatever you gave on that night, and they had a point guard who was empowered to make those decisions and who was great at it.
Yeah, just older, but I like that. That's especially as it come up to this Florida game, because, you know, Corey Brewer could light you up. Noah could have a big game. Mayberry was the shooter. Missing one more. Oh, Horford.
Right.
So it was the another beast down low. So yeah, that's interesting, and they were really good defensively too.
Yeah, they were tremendous defensively. And Corey, you know, they in their case, their ace defender was 6'7 instead of 6'3. But as good as Corey Brewer was, you know, I've said before, and I continue to see this every time I watch UK play, that Ashton is the best I've seen at reading the basketball as a defender, at getting, you know, deflecting, stealing, taking it off you out of your hands or taking it off you in flight. The best I've seen in college basketball, and he continues to reinforce that regularly.
Talk with Mike DeCourcy, sportingnews.com, at TSN Mike on Twitter. We'll take a break, and we'll come back, talk a little bit more about the Cats. I want to talk about a story that Mike has up as well at Sporting News about big-time scorers in college basketball. We'll get to that when we return. It's the Leach Report on Radio Network. Serve up. Bye. Welcome back.
Look for the Leach Report on Facebook. Show updates, contests, and other cool stuff. Check it out today.
Mike Corson is with us on the Kentucky Branded Hotline from sportingnews.com, at TSN Mike on Twitter. I want to talk about a couple of stories. One that is up at ESPN's site, where they are doing writers done a piece on the most dangerous teams outside the teams that are top six in the KenPom right now: Tennessee, Duke, Gonzaga, Virginia, and the Michigan and Michigan State. And about Kentucky is one of the teams they focus on. And on the Kentucky portion of it, the knock or the con, I guess, for Kentucky is an SEC assistant was quoted as saying the consistency of the perimeter shooting was a concern. Cal has said this is his best 3-point shooting team, and I think you can. Both could be right, I would think, because it's his best 3-point shooting team, I think, certainly in terms of the numbers of guys that can shoot it well. PJ, Quickly, Hero, Baker, Johnson. But they are not making them in great numbers. So is that a concern?
Well, I think you can say that about any team in the country. I mean, any team in the country is vulnerable to not make shots on a day. You have to go generally, though, by what a team does in terms of their actual performance. And you've got two guys right now that are shooting over 40, which is a great number. You've got a player in Tyler Hero that you know is capable of shooting above the number that he is. So what you're really saying, what SEC assessment is saying, is Tyler Hero can be really great as a three-point shooter, but he's not been, so they're inconsistent. That's what he's saying. Because, you know, we know that Ashton is not an elite shooter. That's not going to change. Keldon is shooting 42-43%. That's a great number. PJ is shooting 41.5%. That's a great number. It's not on a lot of attempts. The one player who takes a lot and whose percentage is not elite is Tyler Hero. And so, that would be the player that you're circling. And obviously Kentucky, you asked me before about what can be better. That would be one that you would say he's capable of better than what he's delivered in terms of his percentage. And he certainly could see that escalate down the stretch. That could certainly happen. I would doubt that he would do lower. If you gave me the next 6 weeks between now and the end of the regular season, are those 6 weeks going to be above or below 33%? I would be surprised if it were below. So he can do better. And that would be something that would make Kentucky better if he were more consistent at that point. In making shots and shoot it and get it up to 36 to 37 and obviously anything north of that would be great.
You got a story up at sportingnews.com about high volume scores. And I was looking at your Twitter timeline just to see things that you'd been engaged in with fans. It might be something to talk about. And there's one of the fans that engaged you about that particular story. And I think his contention was it's guys just get the coach lets them shoot a lot. So it's that's why they're scoring a lot. And you were going back and forth with it. But there's one line in there that at the end of your discussion that I'm going to quote the line and you can talk about. And as soon as I quote the line, my broadcast partner, Mike Pratt's going to leap up and say amen. And the line that you responded with is the game isn't just about draft stock. It's not even mostly about that.
Yeah, the player that we were discussing was, of course, from Oklahoma last year, Trae Young. And what we saw with him last year, and it was a little bit before this point in the season that he went to Oklahoma State. The team's record was 14-3. And he had a game in which he wound up taking 39 shots. And I have never seen national analysts, reporters react more negatively to a single player circumstance than I did that in that instance. And I was appalled. It was so errant. The criticism was so wrong of him because he played really well in a lot of moments in that game and had staked them to a lead in the final 10 seconds, and they didn't hold. It was 3 points. They should have fouled. They didn't do the right job of fouling, and they wound up getting tied. And as a result, they go in overtime, and he didn't play well. But they were on the road. I mean, guys lose road games all the time. He had 8 assists in the game that he took 39 shots. He scored 43, I think, or 45. Actually, it was 48, I think it was. And he got excoriated for that. And that sort of stuck with me, and I wrote about it then, and it stuck with me as I tried to sort of look at this year's season and see what was kind of interesting. And I noticed Marcus Howard at Marquette scoring. He had a 53-point game, and Justin Wright Foreman from Hofstra is a high scorer, a high volume shooter on a team that's the hottest team literally in college basketball right now. They've won 16 in a row. So it doesn't jive with the idea that you can't win like that. More than any other sport, basketball players are criticized when they're great at the most essential skill in the game, which is shooting the basketball. And I hear it from announcers and sometimes coaches that are in the Hall of Fame, by the way, that when a player passes up a shot or passes up too many shots, I hear the announcers or the coach say, they've got to be more selfish. And I think that's the core of this, that when they say that, that it automatically conditions us to think that shooting the basketball is wrong. It's not about being selfish. It's about being aggressive. And when you're a defender like Ashton, you want him to be aggressive without fouling. And when you're a shooter like Justin Wright Foreman or Marcus Howard or Antoine Davis at Detroit, you want them to be aggressive without taking terrible shots. And terrible shots for them aren't always defined by the degree of difficulty, but more often by the circumstance. Shot clock. Is it the first pass? Is it, you know, you 5 seconds in the shot clock? Well, you don't have to take a bad shot then. Is it end game and you're up two and, you know, and you're trying to protect the lead? Well, you don't want to take a bad shot now. So that's where really all this sort of flows through this story. And I talked to those three players, Antoine, Marcus, and Justin, about what it's like to be that guy. And is it hard because your teammates think about you maybe a different way, or you know, do you hear anything from them? You know, I talked to Sam Hauser from Marquette about playing with Marcus Howard, and Sam said, you know, there are times when you're on the floor and you're like, what, you know, in so many words, what kind of shot was that? And then it goes in, and you're like, oh, I like that. So it was an interesting dynamic, and I hope people get a chance to read it, because I certainly enjoyed putting the time into it.
Yeah, it's an interesting piece, and it's up at sportingnews.com. It's where you can go find it and follow along on Twitter at TSN Mike, and he joins us each Friday here on the Leach Report. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Tom.
Kentucky had a high-volume score, remember, in 2016. Jamal Murray shot and scored at a much higher level than a Cal player typically does. Typically, Cal likes teams like this one, where, as Mike was saying, you've got variety of guys that could go for 20-plus on any given night. That team, though, didn't have it, so he had to adapt. And Jamal Murray played his role very well and needed to be a volume scorer, not for anything about being selfish, but for that team to have its best chance to win. We are five away from the top of the hour. We'll come right back and wrap up this edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Lakes of Lexington. The Wildcat history. This day, 1971, Kentucky routed Auburn 111-74. Back in those days, 100-plus games were not that uncommon. Tom Parker had 27 to lead Kentucky to that victory. Birthdays, Walter McCarty, Andre Riddick. A couple of former Wildcat players celebrating birthdays today. Our Tito's Vodka Race of the Week is the Grade 2 Holy Bull Stakes at Gulfstream Park tomorrow. One of the first big preps on the road to the Kentucky Derby for the three-year-olds. Maximus Mischief's going to be the favorite, I'm sure. A really exciting prospect as a two-year-old up in Philadelphia, and then went to New York and won a big stake up there. So this is his first big test down in as a three-year-old down in South Florida. There's a horse named Mijos that was a really impressive allowance winner in there. Same for a Federal Case that used to be owned by Windstar. A long shot to keep an eye on, I think, is Harvey Wallbanger, Kenny McPeak, two-year-old, that ran really well at Keeneland and Churchill against some good fields last fall. And I wouldn't be surprised if he gets in the mix. Don't know if he can win, but going to be interested to see if Maximus Mischief is, as they say, the goods in the Holy Bull tomorrow. We'll talk about that and more on Monday after the Cats and the Gators tangle. We'll have the recap. See ya. Have a great weekend.
Whenever you miss a show, and be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to leachreport@gmail.com. See you next time, right here on the Leach Report Radio Network.